Psalm 1, just while we teach on the Psalms, it is important to note that the Psalms are not chapters, they're Psalms. If you ever hear somebody say Psalm chapter, you know, 1, then you don't tell them in front of everybody, but help them out. You know, they're not chapters, they're Psalms, and you'll notice that as you read it. Psalm 1 is just fantastic. How many of you love Psalm 1? Just the way it starts out. He says, "Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly." Who do we take advice from? Who do we look to for counsel? I remember a friend of mine when somebody called him and was giving him financial advice. And he said, "Well, let me ask you a question. How much money do you have in the bank?" And the guy said, "Well, why does that matter?" He said, because I've got, you know, some commas in mine. And I don't know if I should be taking financial advice from you if you don't have any in yours. So who are we taking counsel from? Who's counseling us in our lives? Do we really want somebody who has no experience counseling us? Who doesn't walk with God? Now, look, you know, it's difficult for a pastor, you know, let's say 19-year-old pastor, to pastor people who have life experience when he has none. But if he walks with God and if he knows the Word of God, he can give biblical counsel. That's what we need. He might not be able to tell it to us from the perspective that he's walked with us there. You know, it's so important that we, as the church, having experienced cancer, having experienced divorce or bankruptcy or addiction or the loss of a spouse or a parent or a child, having gone through bankruptcy or foreclosure or whatever it is, cancer, whatever it is in your life that you've been through that were the valleys and the hardships in your life, we have to use that to help people that are facing it. Because you've come out the other side. You've been there. You've walked where they're walking now. And for them to be able to look at you and say, "You survived, so can I." Or for you to look at them and say, "I survived, so can you." You know, that's so important. You know, you've come through the addiction, you've come through the prison sentence or having, you know, whatever it is in your life that was a calamity and you said, "I don't know how I could survive that going in," but somebody walked you through it. Now it's your job, our job, to walk other people through it. You've been there. Help people with it. And nobody wants to talk about it. You know, well, we don't want to talk about those things about our lives. I get it. Me neither. I'm not going to talk about it openly. But if I find out you're going through it, I'll come to you privately and say, "Hey, I've been where you are." And you say, "Well, I never would have guessed you went through it." That's true, because I went through it. I didn't stay in it. I got out of it. I didn't just park and camp. And that's the problem is we park and camp sometimes and have a pity party. How many of you ever had a pity party? Do you have balloons and like horns and all that kind of stuff? Music? But, I mean, really, we get in a pity party, well, we can really have a great time. And, you know, the thing about misery is what? Loves company. Misery loves company. So not only are we going to be miserable, we want everybody to be miserable with us. Just a great fellowship of misery. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly. Be careful who you listen to, who you take advice from, who is giving you direction in your life. Nor standeth in the way of sinners. You know, this is where they are. This is what they do, living their lifestyle. You know, we're not supposed to do that. We're not supposed to find ourselves in those situations. I bet we could take testimony after testimony this morning of people who were at the wrong place at the wrong time. Anybody? Right? Well, you weren't supposed to be there. You weren't supposed to be standing in the way of sinners. That doesn't mean getting in their way. It means where they are. Or sitteth in the seat of the scornful. Anybody ever had a seat of the scornful? You know, where you sit up and judge everybody else? You ever had one of those? Guys, that's not what we're here to do. We are not here to be that kind of church. We are not here to be that type of church person. And I won't say Christian because that's not Christian. To sit in the seat of the scornful. You know, there used to be a lot of jokes about Baptists being baptized with lemon juice or persimmon juice, you know, because always so sour. Any of y'all ever know some sour Baptists? Don't point fingers, but did you ever know any? Right? Just people who are so unhappy. They're unhappy about everything. But we're not supposed to be that way, scornful, just judgmental. So blessed is that man that doesn't do those things, but, verse 2, his delight is in the law of the Lord. How many of you like laws? What are laws? Well, I like the law that says at a four-way stop, you got to stop too. I like the law that says when I have a green light, you got a red light, you let me go. I like the law that says you can't come to my house and take whatever you want. I like the law that says you can't punch me in the mouth, even if you don't like what I say. Right? Aren't those good laws? I mean, those are good laws. The laws that we sometimes don't agree with are the ones that we feel infringe on our rights. Right? But the laws are there for a purpose. What purpose? To protect us from one another. To protect others from us and us from others. That's what laws are for. Go to the Ten Commandments. That's what the laws are for. Thou shalt not kill. Well, you know, don't you think that's a good idea when you would be the subject of the killing? Yeah. Thou shalt not bear false witness. You say, well, I can say whatever I want. I can lie if I want to. Yeah, but somebody can lie on you too. That's why there's a law that says don't do it. So we don't walk in the pathway of sin, and we don't stand in that way, and we don't operate under their counsel. But what do? We delight in the law of the Lord. What is the law of the Lord? Somebody give it to me simply. Love the Lord thy God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind and all your strength, and your neighbor as yourself. That's the law. Jesus wrapped it up real good, put a bow on it for us. When it comes to stealing and killing and false witness and adultery and covetousness and honoring the Sabbath and not having idols and no other gods before me, the Lord's name, all of those things, we can sum it up and say, well, if I love the Lord, I'm not going to dishonor him. I'm not going to rebuke him. I'm not going to create some competition for him. And I'm not going to be ugly toward other people. My delight is in the law of the Lord. Why? Because it's good for me. And it's also good when I observe it. It's good for others. I delight in the law of the Lord. And then he says, in his law, in God's law, does he meditate day and night? We think about those things. We don't want to walk in the sinful ways. We want to be mindful, right? Meditate, mindful. We let it get in our mind. We think about it. It becomes part of our process. You know, like a sermon. How many of you remember what the sermon was last Sunday? One person. And I'm not going to test him, but he says he remembers. One person. All right? But think about that. What's that? Okay? But are we focused on the text, right? Jason knows it. Or is it supposed to affect the way we think and the way we live? You know, because if we don't apply it, what good is it? If we don't put it into practice, has it helped us? So it's not so much that we have it memorized and all the points and the subject, the title, and the text. That's not the point. The point is, did it change the way we live? Did it change the way we think, right? Or did it encourage and challenge and inspire? Okay, he says in God's law, in his law, does he meditate day and night? He's mindful of God's law. And that's what we're after. Verse 3, because there's a benefit. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water. You know, and I always think about this, and as I have it memorized and rehearsed it or recited in my mind, you know, I always miss that part. He shall be like a tree, and I always think, planted by a river. That's not what it says, is it? planted by the rivers. Rivers. We need to have multiple sources that are being a blessing. Don't you want to be blessed from every angle? Is it okay to be blessed from this side and cursed from this side? Nobody wants that. That's balance. We don't need that. We want to be flourishing. He says, it shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. You ever have an unfruitful season? You ever go out to a citrus tree and look up and say, there's no fruit on it. Cut it down. Well, here's the question. Is it season? Right? Is there supposed to be fruit on it? Because as Christians and as church members, sometimes we get discouraged because we feel like God's not really using us very much right now. I just don't feel like I'm really useful to God right now, we'll say. Well, maybe it's not your season. You see, when Jesus came to that one tree, where he talks about the master that came to the tree, and he said, cut it down and throw it in the fire. Remember that? And what did the keeper of the field say? He said, give me a year to take care of it. And so he said, okay, but in a year, if it's not producing, it's out. And so the keeper, the husbandman, says, he dug around the tree, he exposed the roots, and he put dung about it, he fertilized that tree, and it flourished. Well, the same thing is true of us, isn't it? Sometimes we're not flourishing. Sometimes it's not our season. And sometimes it won't be our season unless somebody takes up with us and gives us some care. And shows us some friendship and some fellowship and some love and some discipleship. Say, well, you see that person, he got saved and he got baptized and he came to church for a little while and he dropped out. Why is that? Was somebody taking time with them and trying to teach them and trying to build them up and trying to encourage them? Because if we don't do that, why would we expect anything different? Excuse me. So, he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. So important. His leaf also shall not wither. Isn't that a great encouragement there? His leaf shall not wither. That means we're not going to have the times of discouragement. Discouragement. Sadness, weakness, his leaf shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. What man is this? Blessed is that man who walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. So what are we talking about? We're talking about someone who has rejected the world and given himself to God. Given himself to understanding the Word of God. Let me say this again. If you will apply the principles and the standards of this book, your life will be better. Saved or not. You say, well, I don't believe in Jesus. I don't believe that God sent His only begotten Son to die for my sins and save me and keep me from going to hell. Okay. But it still works. I mean, if you want to have a blessed life and go to hell, that's up to you. But what I'm telling you is the standards and the principles of God work, even if you don't accept Christ. I don't know why anybody would want to do that, but it'll still work. It says, so when we reject the world and look to God's ways and follow God's ways, we will prosper, he says in verse 3. The ungodly are not so. But are like the chaff with which the wind driveth away. Therefore, the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. If you wonder what's wrong, look at what you're doing. And if you're doing the same thing and getting the same results and you're not satisfied, it's time to change. It's time to switch something up. It might be just a little adjustment, but something's got to change. And sometimes, have you ever had this happen? Have you ever had a tree and you planted it and it didn't thrive? Or maybe just a bush or a plant and you moved it and you replanted it and it thrived? Anybody? Maybe you're just in the wrong place. Reminds me of that guy on the plane, and he was wearing his wedding band on his right hand. And the guy looked at him, he said, "You know you're wearing your wedding band on your wrong hand?" He said, "I married the wrong woman." Psalm 2. That's terrible, isn't it? Why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? We got six psalms to cover here, so we'll start skipping around a bit. But it says, the kings of the earth set themselves. Rulers take counsel together against the Lord, against his anointed. So those who are in power, he says, they put themselves there. They have positioned themselves there. They have profited themselves. They benefit themselves. It's tragic what happens. And I'm sure you've all seen the movie, and if you haven't, you should. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. All right, we take this innocent, naive, honest man, and we send him to Washington, and he wants to make a difference. And he gets there and finds out that's not how it works. We're all in it here for ourselves. You can benefit too if you'll just play the game. And unfortunately, the Bible tells us that's reality. It's not just Hollywood. It's not just politics. That's the reality. Verse 3, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. He that sitteth in the heaven shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. So what are we doing? So those who think they have everything figured out and they believe they are in control, he says, let's just shake off any restrictions. Let's just not have any rules for us. And that's, you know, unfortunately, again, where we find ourselves, with government thinking that they're not accountable. And why would they think they are? Because obviously they're not. They do whatever they want at this point. He that sitteth in the heaven shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. Then shall he speak unto them in his wrath and vex them in his sore displeasure. Yet have I set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. I will declare the decree the Lord has said unto me. Thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee. Ask of me, and I shall give thee the heathen for thine inheritance, the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. Thou shalt break them with a rod of iron. Thou shalt dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. So what is this speaking of here? Think about that. You see any parallels with verse 6 through verse 9? And this is the psalmist, right? Does that not look like the millennial reign of Christ? I have set my king in Zion. He shall rule with a rod of iron, right? Shall break them with a rod of iron, dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. This is prophecy. Verse 10, be wise now, therefore, O ye kings. Be instructed, ye judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry, and you perish from the way when his wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are all they that put their trust in him. Again, the psalmist, right? Where's Jesus? Jesus not born. He's in heaven at that point, of course, and making appearances on earth. But this is prophecy. It's still prophecy. Still looking forward. Look at Psalm 3:4. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. Now you'll see throughout the Psalms that word Selah. And for all those who have studied it, believe it is just a musical instruction as to how to sing the psalm, because psalms are songs. And so that word has no definition, but it's just believed to be instructive in singing. Look at verse 2. There is no God for him. There's no help for him in God, Selah. And then again, verse 4. I cried to the Lord, my voice. He heard me out of his holy hill, Selah. I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Verse 8, salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy people is upon thy blessing, Selah. So again, it's a song that David has written here, a song for us to sing. And it's a song of deliverance. It's a song of protection. It's a song of confidence in God. In Psalm 4, now that I've said that they're psalms, not chapters, I keep wanting to say chapter. Psalm 4 and verse 3, but know that the Lord has set apart him that is godly for himself. The Lord has set apart him that is godly for himself. Remember what Paul told us in the New Testament? You are not your own. You're bought with a price. We are not our own. We are set aside. What did he tell Jeremiah? Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. And or I sanctified thee and ordained thee. Right? There's a purpose. Before you were born, before you were conceived. We were driving down the road and there was a sign on the side of the road. And Ben looked over. He said, Dad, what is conception? I said, in what regard, son? Well, that sign just said that 18 days after conception, a baby has a heartbeat. What's conception? Yeah. Good times being a parent. Amen. So, there you go. That's probably true. And I have no idea where I'm going from here. God has set him himself. So before conception, there we are, back on it. Before they meet and become a human, before that egg is fertilized and becomes a person, before God, you know, when that happens, they say there's actually like an electrical charge that takes place in that moment. And it lights up as they come together. Before that moment, God knew us. Isn't that incredible? God knew you before that moment. And before he formed us, he had a purpose for us. You say, well, no, because I was an accident. No, you weren't. God had a plan. God put you here on purpose. Well, the circumstances of my conception were not holy or just or righteous, or maybe they were even violent. Well, that may be true, and that offense is against the offender, but that does not change the point. That before that happened, God had a plan. Before you were born, before you were conceived, God had a plan. And who knows? And we could look at all the testimonies that have been given through the years, like Tim Tebow's testimony. You know, when Corey was still, before he was born, there were complications, and we went to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, it's a spontaneous abortion, which means a miscarriage. And so just go to the hospital and get a D&C. All right, y'all seen Corey? When both Reagan and Ben, when she was pregnant with both of them, the doctors were saying, well, things aren't just looking right. Something's wrong in there. Thumbs not, and you need to do this test and that test, and they're going to be born with this and that. And y'all seen them? God had a plan. God had it. Don't monkey around with God's work. Let God do his work. And so that's before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. Look at what he says. Verse 3, know that the Lord has set apart him that is godly for himself. I'm not here for myself. I'm not here for you. I'm here for God. The good news is that God says, I need to take care of you and I need to take care of me. But we got to put God first. Verse 4, stand in awe. Sin not. Any questions on those two words? Sin not. But a little sin? Sin not. A sin nobody knows about? Sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still. What's he saying? He's saying reflect on your life. Get your heart right. Get your mind right. Get your life right. Just you. You don't need any other counselors. You know what I find about people that walk through those doors? They know right from wrong before they come in here. They know what sin is before they come in here. A lot of them already know they need Jesus. But we're going to tell them anyway. But they know, because we have enough sense to know right from wrong. He says, just stand in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart. Just think about it. Look at your life. Examine yourself. Paul said that to the Corinthians. He said, let a man so examine himself. I need to be looking at me. We spend so much time judging everybody else. What we need to be doing is looking in the mirror. We're looking in the mirror of our soul and saying, what do I need to fix? What do I need to change? What do I need to rid my life of? That's why people get mad at the preacher when he talks about their sin, because they didn't think anybody knew. They know it's wrong. Should I say you knew it's wrong? Verse 6, there be many that say, who will show us any good? Lord, lift thou up the light of thy countenance upon us. Thou hast put gladness in my heart, more than in the time that their corn and their wine increased. I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me to dwell in safety. So look what he says. He says, God is so good to us, it's better than anything else we can think about. What's the best day of your life? Anybody? Day you got saved? Okay. Anybody else? The best day of your life? I mean, because that's going to top it, isn't it? Guys, you're supposed to raise your hand and say, the day I married her. That's what you're supposed to I throw you softballs. I don't know why you don't pick them up. Right? The day I met her. Well, so the day of salvation is better than that. It's when we got saved, when we gave our heart to Jesus, when we understood who he is to us. Psalm 5, verse 4. Thou art not a God that has pleasure in wickedness, neither shall evil dwell with thee. The foolish shall not stand in thy sight. Thou hatest all workers of iniquity. Verse 10, destroy thou them, O God. Let them fall by their own counsels. I was talking to somebody the other day, and he was fussing about a guy he had hired to do some work. He said, yeah, I hired this guy, you know, hired him, trying to give him a little extra money, and they were actually cleaning out an estate. And he said, every time I turned around, the guy was putting stuff in his pocket. He said, one time I walked by, his pockets were just full of coins and anything he could find in the house. And then he would take a break and go see his girlfriend. And, you know, it was so unreliable. And he said, now that I'm done, I think I'm just going to tell him off. And I said, why? Is it going to help you? You really think that's going to help him? If you call and fuss at him, he already knows he's a terrible worker. He already knows he's a thief. He already knows he's lazy. So if you say it again, is it going to change anything? He said, no. I said, then why do it? You're just aggravating yourself. Just be done. Just be done with it. Look at what he says. Let them fall by their own counsels. So many times in our lives and the undertaking that we have, you know, we've had to come to the conclusion that people will destroy their own situations. You don't have to help them. You don't have to plan the trap. You don't have to set a trap for them. They're going to mess up on their own. Just stay out of the way and let them do it to themselves. Don't be part of their downfall. If you've got an enemy, somebody who's against you, just stay out of their way. They will fix themselves. They will trip over their own deceit. And that's what the psalmist is saying here. Just let them fall by their own counsels. Verse 11, but let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy, because thou defendest them. Let them also that love thy name be joyful in thee. For thou, Lord, wilt bless the righteous with the favor. With favor wilt thou compass him as with a shield. So again, as Christians, as believers, as the faithful, God's good to us. Wouldn't you say God's good to us? Look at all the blessings that we've experienced. Look at our lives and our health and our strength and the blessings of our family. You know, we hear these prayer requests. And yes, there are people in our church that are having serious problems right now. Some, you know, with health and others with different situations. But overall, when we look at our lives, we see God's hand is he's good to us. Especially when we look at what others are going through. Psalm 6, verse 2. Have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am weak. O Lord, heal me. My bones are vexed. My soul is also sore vexed. But thou, O Lord, how long? Return, O Lord, deliver my soul. Save me for thy mercy's sake. In death there's no remembrance of thee. In the grave who shall give thee thanks? I am weary with my groaning. So we see a transition, don't we? Anybody ever have a night like Psalm 6? Look at what he says. He said, my bed is made into a swimming pool. Verse 6, I'm weary with my groaning. All the night make I my bed to swim. I water my couch with my tears. Just broken. And just poured out. How many of you ever cried till you just couldn't cry anymore? Right? Tear ducts were just empty. You just didn't have it in you to, you couldn't cry. You knew you felt like crying, but you couldn't anymore. That's what's going on here. King David can survive it, so can we. We got to put our hope in God and be honest with God. Mine eye is consumed because of my grief. It waxeth old because of my enemies. Depart from me, all you workers of iniquity. For the Lord has heard the voice of my weeping. The Lord hath heard my supplication. The Lord will receive my prayer. Let all mine enemies be ashamed and sore vexed. Let them return and be ashamed suddenly. You see, David had a son who decided he was going to take over the kingdom, take over the throne, even take his wives. And Absalom was on his way, and David got word, and David left. Because David said, I'll not fight my own son. He went weeping out of town. You could see the king with his shoulders slumped and his head hung down in the tears, the shame, the humiliation. With people following, and they'll come up and gather, and they'll say, King, we're going with you. No, just go back. Go back. But what are you going to do? I'm going to go, and if there's a time, you can send for me. Broken. Shimei starts cursing at him, kicking up dust. Joab says, let's get him. David says, well, he's right. I'm no good. Head hung low, shoulder slumped over. You see, he says, I make my bed to swim. I'm just poured out. I'm just weeping. I'm crying. Can you imagine a worse thing than your own son betraying you in such a way in front of all the world? But then he says something. He says, but the Lord heard my prayer. You know, David didn't have to lift a finger against his son. In fact, when Absalom was finally killed, David wept. The loss of his son. There was so much heartache and tragedy in David's life. And while we might be inclined to say, well, you know, look at what he did, the truth is we've all experienced heartache in our lives. As close as we've tried to walk with God, as much of an example as we've tried to be, the world is still all around us. When you put a healthy post in the ground and it's surrounded by dirt, eventually the earth is going to find its way in. And that's a Christian in this world. And so we just keep looking up to God and doing our very best until he takes us home. Anything? 72 Psalms to cover this quarter. All right, that'll keep us on track. Let's take a break.